The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Four rounds down, and according to some, we finally have sample size. So can we genuinely, at this point, separate the pretenders and the contenders? The big team here on the Fox Footy Podcast will attempt to do that in our post-round four, pre-round five edition of the Fox Footy Podcast. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and the regular team has assembled here in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker to have a look back at the weekend's action and preview the weekend's action as well. Firstly, Chief WWE correspondent for foxsports.com.au and more sports part-timer, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
To think I could be watching Monday Night Raw right now, but instead I'm here on the Fox Footy Podcast. It's where I'd rather be.
Yes, yes. No, we're great to have you on board as well. And Peter Senior himself, Tom Morris.
Thank you, Ben. From where I'd rather be. What is it? What's an ad for
it's
that?
Wrestling. It's great today, perfect tomorrow. What's that new Queensland slogan?
Yeah, the Queensland.
Oh, Queensland, yeah, from where you'd rather be. Yeah, no, I prefer to be in Melbourne at the moment, especially given how Brisbane and Gold Coast are tracking along, especially the Lions on the weekend.
Yes.
Weren't they just shocking? Two goals, 5-17.
Carlton too.
But
not all Queensland.
And I was in Hobart. I know we'll get into it, but I will say this about Brisbane. They were coming for a short break. They were travelling. It was always going to be tough against the premiers at the MCG. But geez, they just looked all over the place.
Wet weather exacerbating the skill gap, I imagine.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be in Melbourne as well, considering the closing ceremony at the Gold Coast on Sunday night as well.
Come on, guys. Let's just stop being critical. They tried their best.
Yes, they did.
I imagine.
Thank you, Peter.
Maybe I'm on my lonesome here, but I don't like ceremonies regardless. Show us the sport, and I couldn't care less about the opening or closing ceremonies.
I don't know anything about any closing ceremony other than this one. So they've done their job, I guess.
Nicky Webster was opening ceremony.
All opening.
Sorry, Ben.
That's quite all right. No, let's get into the match committee big calls. So a player that should be either dropped or picked ahead of this weekend. Max, starting with you.
Quite clearly, Melbourne needs some changes. Jaden Hunt coming back in would be good, especially given they are against Richmond on Anzac Eve with their fast little forward line they've got going on there. Would be a nice little addition. And he's a great player, so I'd like to see him back
drop?
In.
Drop? Can you knife someone for us?
No, my big call is bringing him in. I'm not making two big calls.
No, Jared Healy was big on that on the couch last night, bringing Jaden Hunt in. Speaking of couch, Tom Morris, what is your match committee big call?
Ryan Burton needs to come back in. I'm pretty sure he will for Hawthorn, given the injuries to Apuopolo and Rioli.
Kicked 2 goals.
Yeah, 24 touches, 2 goals on the weekend, but I would still bring him in to defence for Hawthorn. I'd really do like him behind the ball. I know he grew up as a forward predominantly. I know he had some bad injuries as well. South Australia. But I like him behind the ball, and I'd push Taylor Dre or just someone else forward. But I think Burton has to come in to face North Melbourne.
Well, the Hawks, I think, had a great win on Melbourne, obviously, Maxie. But I think right up near foxfooty.com.au's high rating column, the power rankings. Take us through the power rankings after round four.
If I said to you at the start of the season that after a month we'd have Hawthorn above Adelaide, what would you say? Would it be shock?
I would have spat at you.
Power rankings probably deserve to be scrapped.
Well, it turns out that that is the case.
Wow.
Hawthorn up in fifth, Adelaide sixth after their shock loss to Collingwood. It's a weird situation where Richmond's a unanimous top pick for the power rankings. They're sitting number one. I think everyone agrees on that. Sydney second, and for mine, that's almost just out of respect for them as a club. I don't think there is a clear second best team right now. I think Richmond is probably the clear favourite for mine.
Yeah.
But after that, every team has flaws. Even Sydney hasn't looked that great in some of its wins. And we saw over the weekend against the Western Bulldogs. We're not terrific.
Yeah, I think what's become apparent is the very best teams actually aren't as good. Whereas I think the bottom teams are just holding. And as a result, the competition is so tight.
Except for maybe the bottom two.
Carlton especially are shocking. I think St Kilda are pretty bad. But we see it every year since expansion came in, GWS and Gold Coast. It's getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And you could realistically make an argument that 9 or 10 or 11 teams could win the flag, I reckon. And probably 12 or 13 teams could make the top 6.
Where does North Melbourne sit on the power rankings?
So they are in 14th. People are not wanting to rate them too highly after the Gold Coast situation where they were 2-0 and getting into the top 8. And there's that recency bias of, hey, they've won. They must be improved. And we sort of make some assumptions about a team. And then you actually see them play against teams that aren't at their level or below it. And suddenly you realise, oh, wait, Gold Coast has no Gary Ablett and he's not very good.
So, Tom, how much do we read into the fact that North Melbourne is the best defensive team in the competition at the moment?
A lot. You read in a fair bit, I would have thought. I know they haven't played some amazing teams. Yes, because look at their best players. Wade and Brown up forward, Tarrant in defence, I really like. And then blokes like Higgins and Zeeble are solid players in the midfield. Their best aren't superstars, but they've still got some reasonable players running through there. And against Carlton, 13 of the 16 youngest players on the field were Blues.
Mm.
So they're not. North Melbourne isn't necessarily rebuilding from the very bottom. They are young. I wouldn't say they're a gun defensive team. I don't think they're going to finish the best defensive team in the comp.
No.
But 4 weeks isn't a shocking sample size, and it shows they're doing something right.
I think it is when you look at the teams they've played, though.
What, Gold Coast, St Kilda, Carlton, and who was the other team they
Bulldogs.
Played? Yeah, the Bulldogs when they were struggling. I still think it means something, though. I tipped North Melbourne at 17th, and they've exceeded those expectations.
Oh, so, yes, my point is more that North Melbourne, everyone underrated them. Everyone thought, oh, they must be crap because they're rebuilding. But you look at the base that they still have, and clearly they've got talent.
Yeah. Well, Ben Brown's my favourite player in the comp at the moment.
He's going well, isn't he?
I love watching him play.
He's going very, very well. But you have to look at it. North Melbourne conceded 103 points on average last year, conceding to 63. That's 6.5 goal difference. Yeah. That's quite unbelievable.
Bigger test against Hawthorn this week.
So which team is the hardest team to get a read on at the moment? Oh. And I put four clubs into this category. You can add another one in if you'd like. But I think Collingwood, Adelaide, Essendon, and probably Melbourne as well. We'll get into the D's in a tier.
Yeah, because West the Coast as well.
And the Eagles.
Yeah.
The Eagles for a different reason.
Yeah.
I think people just don't want to think the Eagles are good. The Eagles are better than they were last year. 100% they are better than they were last year. And last year they won a final.
And that's without Pritis and Mitchell, yes, and Butler and Petrie.
Their midfield had nowhere to go worse. They were already 17th in contested possessions in the midfield area of the ground, so they couldn't get much worse. You bring back Nick, that's it. Improved them all over the ground, and the small forwards are coming together as well.
It's a great competition. We're going to be asking ourselves all year, who is actually good? And we may not know until the third week of the finals or the fourth week of the finals who is actually good, as we've seen the last 2 years. And West Coast is a classic example of that. I think Adelaide are incredibly tough to read because they've got all these injuries.
Oh, so many, and to key players, the Crouches, and Sloane's
tough
not,
on them.
Sloane's not fit at the moment either.
No,
they've only played one good game this year. Having said that, it was against Richmond, so a good team to play your best game against.
Which makes it even harder to get a read on. So you mentioned that we might not know until the third or fourth week of the finals.
We might not know until the Premiers are named, until who the Premiers are going to
but
be.
That's good though, isn't it? Gil McLaughlin's idea is that anyone can beat anyone on any given day, and I think probably 16 teams are in that boat at the moment.
As objectively as possible, Tom,
yes, Ben.
Will the Demons be there in the third week of the finals?
They're not going to be there in the third week of the finals. They'll be there in the first week of the finals. I still think they're going to make the eight.
Make it?
Yeah, I still think they're good enough to make the eight. I think Hawthorn, we probably underrate how well they're going at the moment.
Yes.
They are a slick machine at the moment, the Hawks, and it pains me to say it, they could easily win the flag this year as well, Max.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't have them in my top four quite yet. I definitely think they're making finals. They definitely could.
Yeah.
They've got the wins on the board so far.
Melbourne is in real trouble when you consider that they've just... there's a stat shown on... Was it 360 last night?
Yeah, Jared Waitley had this.
Both shows covered this.
About the streaks of goals other teams go on.
Yeah.
And Melbourne's inability to stem the bleeding is quite shocking. And... Yeah. Especially bad when you consider all the experienced players they've brought in to that team. They still can't stem the flow. They kicked one goal after quarter time against Hawthorn. Mm. They tried to play dry weather footy when it was wet. They had a makeshift midfield for much of the day. They didn't have wingers. Nothing really worked. And it was, to be quite frank, an embarrassing performance for the D's.
Hawthorn kicking 7 goals in the last quarter with 2 on the bench.
Yeah,
you can't allow that.
That doesn't happen in modern day footy.
No.
It shouldn't happen between Melbourne and Hawthorn, which is what Robbo said last night on 360.
Yeah.
So the stat that you're talking about, the dozing demons, as was dubbed on the couch, in round one against the Cats in 25 minutes, the D's were not minus 37 on the scoreboard, arguably cost them the game. Everyone talks about Max Scorn's kick after the siren. They beat the Lions and the Roos in round two and three, but against Brisbane, they were minus 42 points in a 29-minute period.
Yes.
And against North Melbourne, they were minus 24 points in a 14-minute period. And then you mentioned after quarter time on Sunday.
They just make it hard for themselves, don't they?
Yeah.
Every game, they make it hard for themselves. And I don't know what it comes down to. I get the impression it's actually more of a coaching and structural issue than it is.
Which is what Ruzzi said last night.
More than it is than a personnel issue.
Mm.
But clearly the personnel in that team aren't fitting into the structures to stem the flow as they would like.
So Jake Lever's at the forefront of that conversation, and Ruzzi big on the couch on Monday night about how he's playing too high up the ground. When you're playing that loose man role, which is what he should be playing now that Sam Frost is back on the side, he needs to play deeper in defence as that loose man. But we saw so many goals over the back, so many easy goals against Hawthorn on Sunday. a lot of the time because Lever was playing too high up the ground. That is fixable, as Paul Ruse said, but it is a concern.
They call it come forward. If you've got a good come forward, it means you're really aggressive. And a lot of defences these days push up so hard and so high that the ball can easily get over the back, but they rely on their midfield to have good pressure, so the entries are sloppy, and as a result, the defenders just mop up. Lever's clearly struggling. I'm not as critical of him as many Melbourne fans are at the moment, who think he shouldn't be in the team and he's a disgrace. I just think he's struggling to fit into a system which is, I guess, a little bit foreign to him. And that can happen for any new player in any team in any sport. The real problem is they don't have Jack Viney in the midfield.
Yes.
And that is a massive issue for them.
He's the heartbeat.
Oh, that grunt that he provides and also that leadership is something that's really missing at the moment.
Are you still a Demon believer, Maxie?
I absolutely am. And I think you have to look at the last two premiers to figure out why I would be. So the Bulldogs in 2016 lost to Geelong by 57 points mid-season. Richmond lost to St Kilda by 67 points, like round 17, 18. Yeah. Teams can cop really bad losses and still contend in this era where everything is so compact on the ladder, teams are so close to each other, and teams are working things out. Like, the last 2 years have been the complete, perfect example of you play one good month of footy and you win a flag.
Yeah.
Because Richmond and the Dogs figured out their game plans perfectly in September. And as long as you get there, and once you figure that out, you can be just fine and win the premiership.
Yeah.
So I think Melbourne is in a situation where, because it's not a talent issue, it's a coaching and structural issue, they can solve that if Simon Goodwin and his team are smart enough, and then they can get the right footy going once they get to the finals.
And we say a coaching and structural issue. This is just listening to Paul Ruse speak really last night. We're not the right people to talk about the specific tactics of every single team in the competition. But what is clear is that on paper, Melbourne shouldn't be losing to Hawthorn by 53 points.
No.
Losing to Hawthorn's no disgrace, but being belted an 88-point turnaround is a disgrace.
So just I'll get you a minute to get the power rankings back up on your phone, Maxie, but off the top of my head, I don't think Melbourne in the top eight.
No,
of the
they were ninth
this week. They were ninth,
dropping from sixth.
It's a big drop.
Your top eight: Richmond, Sydney, GWS, Port, Hawthorn, Adelaide, Geelong, West Coast, Essendon, and Collingwood just behind the Demons.
Yeah, Collingwood. You say how hard Collingwood are to tip and know what's going to happen next for them. They could be anything.
Can we not start overrating them, though?
No, we're not.
That's what Ruse said last
because
night.
Every year they do this. Yeah. Every year they have one or two or three good really good games. Away wins as well. They're good on the road.
Yeah, but they are what we think they are now. They played what I think they should be playing like. They've got a very good top end.
They should have beaten Adelaide last year, too.
I know they should have beaten Adelaide last year. I think, and I've been told, an underrated aspect of this Collingwood coaching group is Longmuir's arrival from West Coast. He has provided some balance, another shoulder to lean on for Buckley, and a really good tactical knowledge, which potentially they didn't have last year.
It's very interesting, Tom, because we have a look at the Couch guys discussed this last night. The Pies have changed their style quite a fair bit. So they're now the number one handball team in the competition. They're kicking longer. They're going through the corridor more. Their forward half game is stronger because a lot of their talented players are playing through the forward line a lot more
teams should do, I feel.
Yes.
And they've given up on the sideways movement as well, going along the boundary, which is something, I think, a big criticism of Nathan Buckley, because he came from the Mick Malthouse era where you gradually worked along the boundary line. Stylistically, it seems like there's been a big change amongst the Pies and how they're playing in 2018, which is totally different because Buckley was always, I suppose, given the label of being a bit stubborn when it came to tactics.
Well, you've got to remember that Buckley captained under Malthouse, under tactics broadly similar to that, played the boundary line. He then was assistant coach when they won a flag using that system. So it's very hard for him to change completely the way he's thinking. But I believe Buckley's getting better as a coach every year, even though their results don't show it. And there's going to come a time, if he coaches long enough, when they're going to perform to a level that we think they're capable of. I'm not sure whether that's going to be a premiership, but
I
do rate their top end, and that's what I always come back to. On talent, I think they're good enough to make finals.
That's been the weird thing about Collingwood for 3-4 years now. Mm. They've clearly been they are clearly more talented than their ladder positions indicate.
Yeah.
And there have been injury issues, there have been coaching style issues. That makes a lot more sense for them to play a lot less short kicking game because they can't kick. So avoiding that is a good thing for the Magpies, I imagine.
More direct, the better.
Yes, absolutely. Just on the Bombers as well, another one of those teams that are so hard to predict at the moment. But that victory over Port Adelaide ensured that we have no undefeated teams after round four, Maxie, which is unbelievable.
So for the first time since 1997, every team has a loss after 4 weeks of the season.
That's incredible.
It's a very even comp, very even season. You've got the 2-0-4 teams as well with Brisbane and Carlton, but it's a crazy stat showing just how much has happened already with upsets and things that we weren't expecting.
And how pleased were you to see the Bombers spin the magnets. So Cale Hooker goes down back and makes Michael Hurley look like an All-Australian defender again.
Yeah.
And Jake Stringer plays deeper forward and has a huge game-high four.
He's not a midfielder.
Yeah. No, you can't have a midfielder getting three touches a quarter, which is Jake Stringer. And he can look amazing doing it, but he needs to play forward, and Hooker needs to play defence. That's what Worsfold did. And it made a difference. You play your best players in their best positions, and things seem to just work a little bit better.
I'm not an Essendon fan, but I'm almost annoyed that those moves worked. Because it's like, well, yeah, of course, he was an All-Australian forward. Play him forward.
Yeah.
I know they're trying to solve their midfield issues, but it seemed like it was never going to work from my point of view, and here we are having that played out on the field.
So, with some interesting comments as well on Monday morning from Danny Frawley, former Richmond coach, St Kilda champion as well, about Luke Hodge and whether it is time, four rounds in, to consider whether Luke Hodge plays...
Sits in the grandstand.
Yeah, sits in the grandstand and plays two out of every four games as well. And that it comes after a performance against Richmond, and it was a poor performance overall by the Lions. But Hodge went at 54% by foot against the Tigers, and over his career he's gone at 70%. So minus 16, it's a huge differential for kicking efficiency, but...
It was a bit...
Was that an overreaction?
Yeah, I think it was an overreaction. I mean, first of all, I disagree with Danny Frawley. I think Hodge should play every game he's available for. That's what he's there for.
Yep.
I think the leadership he provides on the field is invaluable, and even though he might miss one more target out of six than what he did 5 years ago, it doesn't really matter at the moment for Brisbane. He needs to be out there teaching the kids and directing them. The second thing is, I also disagree with Brisbane's response that Danny Frawley should go back to bounce and being a clown.
7:30 on a Sunday night, Fox footy.
They might disagree.
After the footy.
They might disagree with Frawley, and they can say they disagree, but don't play the man. Say, no, Danny, we disagree. You're wrong here. But he's entitled to his opinion, just as every former captain is or former player is.
It was very odd. And I would almost go further with your point. It does not matter how Luke Hodge plays this season. If he plays like absolute crap, it does not matter.
Yeah.
Because as long as he's out there getting those players better, more experience, getting them in the right positions, all that stuff. If Brisbane wins, it's nice this year for its fans. They don't need to win.
Ask the young,
I'm not saying, like, I'm more of a promoter of tanking than most.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm not saying tank, but realistically,
doesn't matter.
What value is a Brisbane win?
Exactly right. Or maybe a few members, which they probably need.
I suppose.
But I know what you're saying. And if you're a young player, would you prefer Hodge out there? 100%.
Of course. 100%.
I think what we also have to remember as well is that last year in Luke Hodge's supposedly final year.
And he was retiring.
He wasn't in the best career best form either.
Well, that was probably part of the reason that Hawthorn were trying to push him out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they know more than most, and we've seen how good Alistair Clarkson's been this season.
Well, we've seen Jordan Lewis play. Mitchell retired after a year. I mean, Clarko, he can see when a player's slowing down, and Hodge isn't a star anymore, but I don't care if he's their 22nd best player. I disagree with Danny, but I don't subscribe to the theory that he's a clown or should go back to the bounce.
It's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
It is a little bit harsh. Just a bit of a change of pace now, gentlemen. We're going to be talking about a player, not a player milestone. We normally talk about player milestones and celebrate them, but we're going to be celebrating an umpire milestone. And probably the umpire that is most well known across the AFL is Razor Ray Chamberlain. The great
man. Razor noise, Max.
Himself.
He's very good.
And he's certainly one of the, if not the most popular or polarizing is probably the better word.
Well known.
Out
there
in the AFL. And a man who spent a fair bit of time during his umpire career alongside Razor Ray Chamberlain is AFL Life member and Box Hill number 5 superstar down there at the Box Hill Cricket Club, Michael Vozzo. Hello, Voz.
How are you?
We're really well, mate. And it is great to have you back on. Of course, umpiring over 280 AFL games, including 24 finals. And Razor Ray Chamberlain brings up his 300th game this weekend. What's made Ray such a good umpire to get to his 300th game and perhaps some of his biggest strengths as well?
Look, he's a really determined sort of guy. I mean, he's been one that's obviously copped a little bit over his life and all that sort of stuff, and especially through the media and what have you. But he's a really determined and very focused individual. He's one of the biggest or one of the best preparers for a game day, whether it be through his fitness, his diet and all that sort of stuff. So he's just got an unbelievable determination to succeed. So all credit to him. He's done extremely well to get to where he has, and, you know, he's done a couple of grand finals and all that. So, he's a very good umpire.
Is what you see and hear on television what you get with Razor off the field? A little bit cheeky, pretty talkative. Is that sort of what you get off the field as well?
Oh, look, yeah, 100%. He's probably worse off the field, you know, behind closed doors he is. Look, I mean, the thing is with the microphones and all that, it's quite sanitised on field. And, you know, I reckon he'd probably be a better umpire if he could just probably express his mind and his thoughts a lot more without the microphones. Mm. But off field, he's a character. He's, you know, the real character of the group. He's always got a one-liner or something like that that gets the group, you know, in laughters and keeps us all with our feet on the ground and all that, and keeps everything what's probably more leveled, I guess, is probably the word, because it's quite a highly stressed environment, umpiring, and you know, having a bit of a sense of humour is extremely important, I reckon. So yeah, he's a bit like that behind closed doors.
Have you got a favourite Razor Ray story from your time involved with him in the umpiring fraternity?
Look, probably not so much a story, but every game that you'd umpire with him, he'd duck off for a while, and he'd actually get so worked up, he used to dry reach or vomit a lot before a game. So he gets quite worked up before a game, and it means the world to him. And I think that's the thing, it gets to him in that way, and that's how he sort of lets loose, I guess, before the game, where most of us are pretty quiet, and he can be quite loud in the rooms as well. So just probably more pre-game, it's he's quite different to the rest.
Michael, Tom Morris here. Interested in your thoughts on the future of the bounce. It's been in the news for quite a while now, and clearly there's been some umpires that have, or not some umpires, there's been some news that has suggested that umpires want the bounce gone. Where do you sit with it?
Look, I do like the history part of it, and the component of it. It's been around the game for a long time and all that. Look, I've had a lot of problems with my back, and it's all been bounce related. Mm. I used to have injections in my back and all that, and I guess it is not dissimilar to a player, you know, getting injections into knees and stuff like that to play. But I sort of probably, maybe it sounds a bit silly, but I can remember that the AFL got rid of or put in that second centre circle to eliminate ruckmen running at 20 metres into each other because of knee injuries. And I sort of don't see any real difference with this, with the umpires in regards to backs and shoulder issues and all that. I've got a pretty buggered right shoulder at the moment as well. That's been from bouncing the footy, but
not from rolling the arm over for Box Hill.
I was going to say.
Well, mate, I wish I could, but I can't. I've never been a great bowler, mate. But no, look, the back's always been the main concern, and probably the biggest thing, which a lot of people discount, is in local footy, and you got to think about this. In local footy, umpires aren't allowed to bounce at all. And so, and this actually happened a couple of years ago when I was at Eastern Footy League. We had a couple terrific umpires, and I can remember one young fella. He was absolutely brilliant. And as soon as he got to the VFL, that was the first time he ever bounced. And he lasted only, I think it was a year or 2 years at the VFL. Yeah. Brilliant decision maker. Couldn't bounce for anything because he never practiced in local football. And for me, that's one of the biggest things. And I think people discount that. And you think that you can just go and pick it up as soon as you get to VFL, but you can't. You need it. This is a thing that I never mastered in 25 years of umpiring, and I could, you know, I was barely an 80 to 85% bouncer. And these kids are expected to do it after 10 years of local footy, go straight to VFL, meant to master it within 1 to 2 years. It's impossible. So I think that's a little bit forgotten in all of this hysteria around keeping it. It's not just the injury, but the fact that it's been outlawed in local footy. So, yeah, if they want to keep it, they've got to maybe train up some of these promising guys a little bit earlier in their careers.
Michael, Max Lawton here. It's a tough game to umpire, I'd imagine, nowadays. You're getting more contested ball. It's more chaotic than ever. Is that true? Is it even more difficult than when you started out umpiring, did you say, these days?
Look, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I've been retired for a few years, but the games, I remember probably in my later part of my career, and the Sydney Swans used to do a lot of the flooding type tactics, and there was a lot of numbers around the footy. The more numbers around the footy, something could happen and you'd be completely blinded by a player who's standing right in front of you, and you know, you only have to be half a metre out of whack and you get blinded by an incident on the other side. And So that's where it is quite difficult. But I think nowadays the umpiring, they try and push the other guy up, or nearest umpire up a little bit further, and to be on the other side of the pack. So that's why you get a lot of what they call out of zone free kicks now, because they're encouraged to push up a little bit more to help alleviate those issues around congested footy. So, and that works pretty well. And I think you'll probably find that they get more free kicks than what we did, say, 7-8 years ago. So that's probably why I saw a stat recently. I can't remember what it was. It was in the paper or something. They mentioned how there's too many decisions made.
Yeah.
I think Mick Baldass actually was quoted in Herald Sun.
Yeah, he wrote the article.
He's a lot more free kicks being paid now. Well, that's because the umpires are pushing up and they get free kicks that they see on the other side of the packs where we didn't see those 7 years ago because we weren't encouraged to push up as much.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? From my perspective, one of the things that baffles me is that when there's two umpires watching a contest and one umpire is sure there's no free kick and the other umpire seems to see one, it's the umpire who sees the free kick that overrules the umpire that is sure there is no free kick, and there seems to be no consultation there. It's just one over the other. My question to you, though, and based on what you just said, is can you please describe to us the attributes of a perfect umpire?
The ironic thing, I don't think you can ever assimilate perfection with umpiring, because it's the nature of the beast is that it can never be perfect. There's always that ability to, you know, whether it be miss one bounce, whether it be miss one free kick or pay one incorrectly. What you've got to do is try to be as close to. And I can't help but look at someone running around now like Matt Stevic, who's almost the perfect role model and the perfect, has all the umpiring attributes. Brilliant athlete, got a tremendous desire to do to do umpiring, and he's got a very good diet, and he looks after himself extremely well. And I think he's a 5-time All Australian umpire. Back in my day, guys like Brett Allen was the perfect umpire because he kept things so simple. He didn't worry about watching his game back, didn't worry about watching video, didn't worry about anything, didn't read the paper, and he just kept everything so simple. And for me, I try to model myself a little bit on him. I don't think I ever succeeded, but I tried as best as I could.
You're selling yourself short, Charles.
Sorry?
You're selling yourself short.
No. I was only average, mate. But someone even like Sean Ryan's a bit similar to that as well. You know, they keep things pretty simple. So a bit of a mixture of all those attributes and those couple guys, I think, gives you the perfect guy.
Is there a significant rule tweak, Voz, or something that the AFL might be able to implement to either better support umpires or perhaps make umpiring a little bit easier in the modern-day climate?
As far as a rule change and all that to make it easier, I don't know. But, I mean, this protected area one right now, what I'd love them to do and to tweak and would be easier to umpire that is you don't pay it unless the player running through the protected area is impacts the player with the footy. Mm. So if a player is looking to turn to the right and the player runs through the protected zone on the left, well, do we need to pay 50? He hasn't impacted the game. We move on. But if the player does impact, absolutely, 100% you pay it, you know, every day of the week. And for an umpire, what you do is you turn and you look for where the player is going to move. You might miss a guy running on the opposite side and stuff like that. But as soon as a player runs and he's impacted, you'll pick that up instantaneously. So, and I think that would help a lot because a lot of the players are genuinely trying to get out of there. But look, I understand why it's been brought in. And I think a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of clubs actually really push for a lot of these rule changes. And this is would have been a club push because they want their players to have the ability to push off pretty quickly and have it free flowing. So I understand why it's been brought in. I think maybe just a little tweak like that might help a little bit as well.
Last one from me, Michael. We all saw what happened with Michael Christian at a female game recently. Do you agree with the AFL's strong stance that no parents should ever speak to umpires during a game? And I guess by extension, is it really difficult to attract and then retain umpires at a junior level?
Look, there's a couple of things to that. Look, firstly, I talk to the umpires all the time when I go and watch my son play footy. Now, and I don't ever talk negative. I would talk always, you know, I think you did well. I did that on the weekend. I have been at games where I went and watched a 15-year-old kid umpire at Baldwin many years ago. This is when they were in the Southern Football League. And I remember supporters from the opposition and the players from the opposition team. And I won't mention the team, but they were using every name under the sun about this kid. And this kid didn't know how to react. And I remember his mum sitting up in the crowd. She was sitting right next to me and she was crying. And I actually do know that kid never umpired a game of footy after that. And so, you know, things like that, if we can alleviate these sort of things, I think that that would make umpiring a lot stronger. But look, genuinely now what I see that umpiring numbers are quite strong. Again, they're getting better, which is good signs. Just hopefully keeping them free from abuse and all that sort of stuff will help maintain the numbers. And then hopefully out of those numbers, we end up getting kids that want to take it on further down the track and become AFL umpires, which would be a good thing.
Great insight, Voz, and well spoken as well. Great ambassador of the game you were during your time and still are. So thanks for your time on the Fox Footy podcast, and enjoy the rest of the footy season.
Terrific. Thank you very much for your time.
Let's have a look at the round five games, and we're coming up to a football fiesta.
This is a great round.
We've got Friday through to Wednesday, which is the break on Monday. So we are hoping for a turnaround in certainly margins and the closeness of games.
I think it's from Friday to not the this Sunday, but the Sunday after.
Sunday week.
Two days without footy.
It's
just the Monday and the Thursday.
Glorious, to say the least.
It's a bit like the Major League Baseball season, isn't it?
Yes.
Just game after game after game.
Omnipresent.
We start with the clash on Friday night between Sydney and Adelaide, the Ryan Fitzgerald Cup. And Fitzy is a big fan of promoting his cup on social media.
I'm sure he is. Former Big Brother housemate and one of my favourites when I was a kid.
More a Blair McDonough man myself. You know?
If I can just go back to my theorem, Max, and Ben, that we mentioned last week.
We hear this.
It was successful. This got a run
in the power rankings.
It works.
As well.
So the theory is, if you weren't listening to last week's Tom Theory podcast, well, I don't call it that, but okay, you can call that if you want. is, and it only applies when one of the teams loses and the other team wins the week before. So, for example, Collingwood Adelaide didn't apply because they both won the week before. So that game's out.
But specifically, not just any win, a win that they really shouldn't have had almost.
A win that a team doesn't play really well, but they get over the line versus a team that loses the week before and gets a jolt up the backside. So the example is Port Adelaide versus Essendon. Classic example. Port Adelaide just got over the line against Brisbane, probably shouldn't have won. Essendon got absolutely belted in their game. Came out and they beat Port because they were dropped. So I believe the team that loses the week before will always beat that team who just wins the week before. So if you go on that theory, Adelaide will beat Sydney this week, and that's why I'm tipping Adelaide. And it was the same with Hawthorn Melbourne. I should have gone with my own theory. Melbourne had won the week before. Hawthorn had lost, and bloody Hawthorn beat Melbourne. Anyway, so that's the theory, Max.
I like the theory. I'd also take into account that teams just change form a lot by week to week, and Essendon was expected to make the top eight by a lot of teams, and so was Port. So it was a more even matchup than people thought.
But it's happened a few rounds in a row now.
The theory does explain it a little bit.
A little bit.
I don't mind it.
Anyway, so I'm going for Adelaide over Sydney.
I might go with Sydney just because it's at home, but I can totally see Adelaide winning this 100%.
Yeah, even if they've got Sloan out, they've got players out, but there's just something about the Crows that I like.
It's now time to have a look at St Kilda and GWS for the Josh Bruce Cup. Will he be back, though, Josh Bruce, for
Jack Steele Cup?
For this game? Yeah,
Jack Steele. Josh Bruce is out for at least six weeks with a back injury.
So it is quite a significant back injury.
Yeah. So their forward line is, well, it's been dented heavily, hasn't it? They've got Paddy McCartan down there, and they're relying heavily on Blake Akers to play further forward and Jack Loney and these sort of guys, Jack Billings. But, Tim Membry's probably in doubt as well. So I'm going for the Giants fairly comfortably, even though it is at Etihad Stadium, Max.
GWS has not impressed me this season, but they've got such a nice run to start this year. They're going to be 5-1, and I can't see them missing finals from that. Although I think a few people sort of had considerations of that in the preseason. I think a few people were saying that they wanted to almost say that the Giants won't make the top eight, but they had to because it's GWS, but going to be 5-1, I would
expect. Who do you think is going to win that one, Ben?
I think that GWS will win that quite handsomely.
Yes.
Peter Hanscom.
The Saints are in a little bit of trouble, so we'll wait and see how that goes.
The Callum Chambers Cup at the MCG on Saturday afternoon.
Prestigious.
I don't know who that is.
Carlton and West Coast. A nice little left footer. Ask Drew Jones when we get back into the office. Callum Chambers Cup. Carlton and West Coast at the MCG with the Eagles having Josh Kennedy back in the side and just a lazy 5 goals upon return. Pretty handy.
Shouldn't this be the Joe Biden Cup? This is the game that he attended when he was vice president.
Yes, he was too. Good for me, Max.
Very. That's the only thing I could possibly think of that would make me want to watch this game. Maybe West Coast will. West Coast will do all right.
I'll be there. I can't see West Coast losing, but then again, it's at the MCG and they don't like playing at the MCG.
Nice tune-up for finals, I reckon.
Carlton, I mean, the reality with Carlton is, in the nicest possible way, especially with Murphy out, they just don't have very many good players.
No.
In fact, they've probably got close to no good players. They've got Cade Simpson.
Cripps.
Cruiser. Kurnow's going to be good, but he's young and inconsistent. There's not a lot of others at the Blues at the moment. And as a result, they're clearly the 18th best team as it stands.
And that's where they should be. Again, let's not overreact. You would like them to be a little bit better, but they should be losing anyway.
They're at the bottom of their rebuild now. I don't think when Bolton came in, they're at the bottom. They've shed the list, and now they are at rock bottom.
No, because I think they'd be about the same team they were last year if they had those players playing who were injured.
Correct. So they've had to go down to then go up. Well, so Doherty's out.
So they've gone down, but almost just based on luck, based on injury luck more than anything.
Yeah. No. Luck. Well, if they win this, it would be great, but I can't see them beating the Eagles, Ben.
Port Adelaide and Geelong for the Paul Kulliriotis Cup.
The Dwayne Russell Cup?
All the Dwayne Russell Cup, of course. Fox Footy's own.
Yeah.
Huge clash. This is a massive opportunity for the Cats.
At the Adelaide Oval. Fascinating game. One of the most of the round for mine. I could see Geelong winning this, although they haven't actually been in that great of form.
No, they haven't.
I feel like that St Kilda win was, 50 points? But that
use
was almost.
Use my theory, Max, in this game.
Port Adelaide lost Geelong. Well, the Geelong shouldn't have. Geelong didn't have a bad win, though.
It wasn't.
So the theory
they were just okay.
They won by 50.
They're missing Ablett. They've got some players
I've turned in the last 30 seconds. It was a great win. Guys, come on.
Port Adelaide will win this, and this is my sure thing for the week.
Sure thing.
Yeah, the Power win. There's no way.
What's wrong with Adelaide?
There's no way that the Power are letting last week's loss just trickle over into another loss at home against, really, what is it, a depleted Geelong team?
Steve Motlock Cup.
It is the Steve Motlock Cup. There's the Tom Harley Cup as well. Played one game for Port Adelaide famously. The Stephen Coops Cup, Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs. It was a high flyer back in his day, Stephen Coops. Very nice player to watch. This is also a big game. And if you have a look at the... I don't think there'd be too much differential in the power rankings between Fremantle and the Western Bulldogs.
There is actually zero differential between them. They were a complete tie based on our ballots. And I think based on that, you would almost give the edge to Fremantle just because they're playing at home. But
I've got nothing to add to that.
What do you say?
Spot on.
Maybe the Dogs are better. Maybe they're improving still. We don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Jonathan Hay Cup between North Melbourne and Hawthorn on Sunday afternoon at Etihad Stadium. We talked about North Melbourne beforehand being the best defensive team in the competition, but this is a difficult task against an in-form Hawthorn.
Rioli and Puopolo injuries help them.
Yeah,
they do.
That could possibly sort of wing the Hawks a little bit. I would still expect them to win by 5-6 goals.
I just back the Hawks, and I don't think I can ever drop off the Hawks until they prove me wrong. I just back them at the moment, and they're playing good footy. They just find a way. Folks like Bruce and Gunston and Shields that aren't notable superstars in the AFL, they are at any other club, you would think they would be A-graders, but at Hawthorn, they're just very good players.
We've just seen them doing it for so long.
Yeah, a bit bored of seeing them do it
It's like
so well.
Pendlebury's. It's the case of the Pendlebury's where we just get sick of his eliteness and we don't talk about it anymore.
Yes, that's very true. Brisbane and Gold Coast, the Q clash.
Thank you.
On Sunday.
We lost the Battle of the Bridge, but we've kept the
we've
Q clash.
Kept the, yeah. Why did we lose the Battle of the Bridge?
Because it's a terrible name.
But we've got to call it something.
The Sydney Derby.
Derby. Depending on what side of the border you come from. Also known as the Michael Riscatelli Shield as well.
Yes.
Who wins this? Brisbane?
Or Gold Coast?
No, I'm going for Brisbane.
But you just said Brisbane were the clear 18th team in the comp.
No, Carlton, I said, were the clear 18th team. Gosh,
both teams had bad losses last week, didn't they? The Gold Coast loss to West Coast was bad.
Yes, it was bad. But that was... what is Jake Nile called the Sunday Twilight time slot before? Geelong porn?
Geelong pornography, yes.
When that's happening. I think that's a similar sort of thing. The game on 5:03 while there's a game on 5:04 on Foxtel. West Coast hosting a game. Not as many people watching it because it's not on the main channel, but they just pump a team.
What's the opposite to Geelong porn then?
Can this be said on air?
No.
2008 grand final, I would imagine.
Yes, that's good, Max.
Very well done. Well, I think Brisbane Gold Coast isn't exactly a frontline game, but I do think the Lions will win this. I really do.
Anzac Eve clash. Will there be more people attend Melbourne and Richmond on Tuesday night compared to Collingwood and Essendon on the Wednesday afternoon?
No.
If Melbourne hadn't been pumped by Hawthorn, maybe.
Correct. If Melbourne and Richmond were both right at the top, then maybe, but as it stands, only one team is. I still think there'll be more at Collingwood versus Essendon.
Particularly when you consider how Collingwood and Essendon played last week. They have timed their runs perfectly to make this as big of a game as it possibly could be for teams mid-table.
Who wins?
I'm going for Richmond, and then yes. I'm going for Collingwood to beat Essendon.
Mm. Collingwood to beat Essendon in the Richard Cole Cup.
Essendon for mine. I think they are a better football team than Collingwood.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, I don't know, something about Collingwood at the moment. Maybe because I want them to be good for some unknown reason.
I was like that last year when I tipped them in my eight.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on, you could do it. I want to be right, please.
Yeah.
No.
You're sort of pushing them forward. Great round of footy coming up, though.
It is, yes.
And Collingwood have a four-day break after that as well.
They do. And as do Essendon as well. And they play Richmond and Melbourne correspondingly.
The crossovers.
Yeah, the crossovers. Yeah. But, of course, Richmond and Melbourne playing for the Brad Miller Cup on Tuesday
Thank you.
Night, which should be fantastic. That's been a big episode of the Fox Footy Podcast.
Yeah, Ben, wow.
We've raced through that express post style, but great work from you. Great to have Michael Vozzo on the program. Make sure you check out the website, foxfooty.com.au, and we'll be back next Thursday after a big round five for the Fox Footy Podcast.